All right, welcome to the March 28th edition of Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, where real men, we don't play. Now, that don't mean that we don't recreate. We get our recreation in. Matter of fact, I had an amazing experience yesterday that we'll get into in a minute, but without any further ado, to my immediate left is Cousin Victor Leslie. How you doing today, V?
Doing good, man. We were talking a little music before the show started, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, to my immediate right, I've known him since Hush was a puppy. One of the baddest drummers that ever picked up a set of sticks out of Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Bubba Bryant. How you doing, Mr. B?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
And to my far right, another B, Mr. Brian Franklin. We'll be hearing from him very, very shortly. He has an amazing technological concept. It's called BAM. 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 BAM works. But without any further ado, yesterday I had an opportunity to go to a CD release rehearsal for the man on the other end of this phone. And by the time he got there, he looked over and saw me. He said, "Oh, Lord, here we go." I'm all in the way, jumping up and down, because they had set the studio on fire. We opened the show with music from this legendary figure. Welcome to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, the one, the only, Ronnie Laws.
Hey, man. Uncle Bobby, thank you so much, man.
No, thank you, man, for letting me be myself, man, because more people would have put me out of their rehearsal, man, the way I was cutting up yesterday. Just to give the people an idea of what was going on, Ronnie has put together a phenomenal new CD that we're going to talk about momentarily. And the band was already in pocket when he came in. And I knew several of the musicians. I knew the keyboard player, a brother named Robert Turner out of Los Angeles here. Young monster, man.
Massive. Young monster. I know that young
man. And my homeboy Bubba's on the drums, who's been with Ronnie for quite some time.
Yeah.
And Craig T. Cooper was just clowning on the guitar. And then just for a little international flavor, he had Larry Antonino. Oh, my goodness, man. So, Ronnie, let's first of all talk about what's going to happen tomorrow night at the Catalina Bar and Grill.
Yeah, it's going to be a fiery show. It's going to be lit up. You know, we got some great players, and you know, you got my man Bubba there and on drums, and you know, it's going to be a very exciting show, man.
So, the song that had me just where I couldn't sit still, Settle Down.
Yeah.
Kind of take us through how you put that song together, man. What inspired that, and why is it going to be, in my estimation, a huge, huge commercial success?
Well, I hope you're right. I mean, I'm excited about it, too. I mean, I actually put the little small production here at home. I have a little setup here at home, and then I took it to the to the big studio and transferred it and embellished on that with bringing in live players like Bubba, coming and bringing his thing on drums and added Craig T. Cooper and it just blossomed into a monster tune, man.
And he's not stretching it, y'all. And Ron is a very humble man. And that's why I'm so happy that he allows me to be one of the voices that will tell you. If you're in the greater Los Angeles area, I don't care if you got to come from Cucamonga, Lancaster, Las Vegas. If you can get here tomorrow
Inland
night.
Inland Empire, Newport Beach,
that,
San
man.
Bernardino,
all
Riverside.
That. All of
come
that.
On.
Can we include Watts?
Watts
too,
yeah.
Compton.
So before I get too, I'm just so excited. I mean, you would have to have been there. Cousin Vic loves music too, Ronnie. See, you got country up in here. It's three Tennesseans and a Watts guy sitting here in the studio. And you know how us country folks is, because Ronnie went to Texas Southern.
I'm from Texas. I'm country too.
Yeah, Ronnie went to Texas Southern, and Bubba went to Tennessee State University. So you're talking about two of the coldest bands there ever was, man. And just kind of tell me how that has inspired your music over the years coming out of that black college experience, Ronnie.
Well, I have an expression, man. You know, if you don't live it, you can't play it. You know, it's about the culture. You know, and that's what that's what nurtured us, you know, growing up. I mean, the whole Southern culture, you know, it has a lot to do with how we feel about things, man, how we, you know, with decisions we make and, you know, how we, you know, who we interact with, you know. Not to mean that, you know, it's a small circle, but, you know, for the most part, man, it's like, you know, just being on, raised on solid ground, man, you know, and you know, it's just a beautiful thing when you, you know, when you can congregate with, you know, guys who come from that, you know, like, you know, Bubba, we, you know, he's a lot younger than me, obviously, but, you know, we relate to each other on those terms, you know, so, you know, musically and just, you know, just in general, you know, so it's just a natural, like they say, a natural blend.
Friends and Strangers, when you did that song, man, and it talked about friends and strangers with our friendship in constant danger, I was going through that, man. I said, how did Ronnie know that was me?
Yeah, well, you know, that, I came up with that title because, you know, being an entertainer, man, you know, you know, you travel abroad and, you know, you meet people coming from all places, you know, and some become your friends and some, you know, are just, you know, strangers in a sense, you know, but yet, you know, you can relate to them, you know, through your music.
I was in college when Press Sensitive came out, and I heard the song before I knew the title, and I'm going to tell you the truth, man. We was some, you know, adventurous folks, so we would go in the record stores, man, and collect some albums and then do our impression of Bob Hayes up out of there, man. And
oh, yeah.
I ended up with that Precious Sensitive, and I saw that album cover, man, and then I heard that song, and it just fit so perfectly. What was your motivation for that title, Precious Sensitive?
Hmm. Well, prior to getting a record deal, you know, I mean, it was a struggle, you know. I mean, I've been in, you know, in and out of in certain bands, like, you know, well, being one of the original members with Earth, Wind, and Fire, and then playing with Humasa Kayla, mm-hmm. and then, you know, just venturing out to go, you know, for a solo career, you know, it was a big challenge, man. I mean, it wasn't an easy route to take, you know, but things fell into place, you know, but, you know, still, you know, when it came time to, when I did finally get signed, you know, it was a relief, but I was still dealing with outside pressures, and that's where that title came with, Pressure Sensitive.
So take me back to, I guess it was around, what, 1980, Bubba? What year did you come out here?
I came out here in late 79, but
I actually met Ronnie in 1980.
Tell him the story, man. Mm.
Yeah, well, the story is this. I just got back into L.A. because I was here before, and then I went back to Nashville. I was frying chicken at KFC, right?
Brother Colonel.
And then, I was doing that before you.
Huh?
I was frying chicken at Church's Chicken. Came out here, man. I mean, that was, you know, trying to get established, and, you know, I had a wife to take care of, and my brother-in-law was the manager of a Church's Chicken, right in the heart of the hood, man.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
You know, he said, well, you know, I know you're gonna need some change, and, you know, you got to take care of certain things. You got to pay your bills. So he said, you can do this part-time. You can still do your music. And, man, that was my day gig, man, frying Church's Chicken.
Yeah, that's kind of ironic, huh, Ronnie?
Yeah, Ronnie, we all would talk to fried chicken, brother.
Yeah, man. But anyway, the way I met Ronnie was that I just got back into town. I was riding down the street on Vine, right across the street from the Musicians Union with Carsey Gardner, great keyboardist. Because he called me up before I left Nashville and said, man, I'm getting ready to go to L.A. You want to come with me? I said, yeah, no doubt. You know, so anyway, we drive down the street. Across the street is a Pro Drum Shop and this Reed store. Ronnie was standing outside.
Just signing music.
Yeah, and I recognized him. And I told Carsey to stop the car right away. I almost got hit by a car trying to cross the street. I was like, yo, your name Ronnie Lyles, man? Are you Ronnie Lyles? He said, yeah, yeah. I said, man, I just got back into town, and, you know, I'm looking for work. He said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go on the road, and I'm going to audition people in a week. I'm going to call you. Of course, I didn't think he was going to call me because I was like, oh, no, ain't no way, you know. Mm-hmm. And he did call me, and it's been the great history ever since.
Wow. Hey, Ronnie, you never knew this, but I knew Bubba since junior high school. Wow. And there was a period where we hadn't seen each other for like maybe 10 years right out of high school. Bubba, I went to University of Tennessee, and Bubba was at Tennessee State, and he went to Eastern Illinois.
Right.
And then I hadn't seen Bubba in many years, and I was living in San Diego, and you had blown up by then. This was about 1983, 84. And I went out to Humphreys to see Ronnie Laws, and I had dinner there earlier, and y'all was doing sound check.
Right.
And I heard this drummer back there pitching one. I'm like, who is that over there killing on the drum? So I walked over to the stage, and he was going by William Bryant.
He's up this game now, big time.
And I hollered out, hey, Bubba! And he knew it had to be somebody from home.
I kept looking at my mom, I said, who could that be?
Who knows you and Bubba?
Man, I was so proud that night, man. I mean, I made a fool out of myself. That's my homie on drums. And Ronnie didn't care, because great musicians, they have no fear. You know, they surround themselves with great musicians. And it's a good thing it wasn't a roof over there, because it was an outdoor venue.
They tore
that place up, man. And Ronnie, how does it feel, man, to walk out in front of a throng of people, knowing they came to see you, and it's up to you to make that evening a memorable night?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always inspiring, man, when you have, you know, people that appreciate what you do musically, you know, but you have to deliver, you know, but it's just really, it boils down to just, you know, loving what you do, you know, and giving it back to them, you know, letting them know how much you appreciate what them being there. And so, you know, naturally you're going to be inspired to give them what they came to see, you know. So that's really it in a nutshell, man.
Hey, Ronnie, this is Victor. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
I got a question for you and Bubba. Mm-hmm. Can you, both of you, tell me that one show where the band was right, the venue was right, and the crowd was right? Because, you know, we get into those moments sometime where the whole place gets in the groove and the band is in it, the venue's right, the crowd's right. Can you name that one time?
Oh, man, that's hard.
Or has there been many?
Yeah, quite a few of those, you know. I mean, maybe Bubba can share that with you.
No, I don't think that there's any one time, because every time I get on stage with Ronnie, it is such an incredible experience for me every time, even now.
Well, I know you jazz musicians don't care, because y'all doing y'all thing anyway. Yeah. It's us that needs to get in it.
It's an interesting question, because I know I done been in some of them shows.
Oh, yeah.
Because Bubba knows me and Ronnie knows me vicariously, that I ain't settling for nothing less than that, right? And I'm all up there, come on with it, man. And I've never been disappointed at a Ronnie Laws show. Now, tomorrow night, what time is the show, Ronnie?
Well, the show officially starts at 7, but we don't probably, you know, there's a couple, I mean, there's an opening act, artist, her name is Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's going to do a couple of things, and we're going to feature Philip Ingram, who's the brother of James Ingram.
Right, right.
And then I come on, and we do like two or three of my, you know, live cuts of the new CD. And I'm, you know, then obviously you can't leave the stage unless I do Friends of Strange.
No, you're going to do, I was at rehearsal yesterday, and I'm telling you right now, y'all going to be mad at me, because I'm going to be, we want more. We want more.
Well, speaking of the new CD, Ronnie, I know you remember when we were actually in the studio recording.
Yeah.
And I heard the stuff for the first time. The first thing I said to you was, man, I can tell, first of all, it's a hit. Everything on there is a hit. It's incredible. And I said to you that, you know what? What I noticed is that you went back to your roots, but it sounds fresh.
Right, yeah.
And it's true. Yeah. Every cut on there is amazing.
Thank you, man. And all the performances on
there, of course, is amazing, especially from Ronnie, because he, man, he's the kid. He's the cat. He's the man. And, you know, it's nobody better. I always tell him that he's one of the greatest saxophone players to ever play.
I wouldn't go that far, guys.
Well, we will. See, that's why you just keep playing and let me do the talking, okay? And it's going to be hard for you to make a lie out of me, because I specialize in the truth when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, what's the name of the CD, Ronnie?
Solo.
Solo. And when will it be available for public consumption?
On the 20th of April.
The 20th of
April.
Yeah. Now, are you going to support that with a tour?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's what this thing is, all, you know, the show all about. It's about tomorrow night. You know, just it's sort of an official, you know, an official announcement of, you know, not only the new CD, but, you know, what's going to come after that. So, yeah, we're definitely putting all that together, and it's going to be really exciting to be, you know, be on the road again with my man Bubba and, you know, the rest of the guys, man.
Well, you know, I rehearsed my part last night, you know, that opening act with the accessories, you know, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you might have to take me out there, too.
Hey, Ronnie, I wanted to let you know, man, I might have to spend half my time on stage trying to calm Bobby down, you know.
Man, I'm excited about this, man. I'm telling you, anybody that is listening to this show, and if you're not listening in the immediate area, because this has the potential to go globally, people do watch this show from parts of the world. Man, if you got friends, man, tell them to come down to the Catalina Bar and Grill. That's on Wilshire, isn't it, Ronnie?
It's on Sunset.
It's on Sunset?
Yeah, it's on Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What, near Cahuenga?
It's right off of east of...
East of Highland.
East of Highland, yeah. Sunset and Highland.
Sunset and Highland,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, east of Highland.
Wow, man. That is going to be, I'm telling you, a night people will never, ever forget, man, because... rehearsals are interesting in that sometimes, you know, the musicians just kind of go through certain phases of a song and all of that. But, man, oh, my God, it's just indescribable what I felt. Not only what I heard, but what I felt. And then for you to come in and claim your throne, because they was killing before you got there. They really was. Yeah. And, you know, I started some mess. I said, man... Ronnie better hurry up and get here, man. There ain't gonna be nothing left.
Well, you know what? Well, one of the things that I've always admired about Ronnie is the fact that because he's such a great player, he allows the musician to really play, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, he's not insecure about how great he is.
Yeah,
he might be talking that mess sometimes, but he's not insecure about how great he is. So he lets us play.
Right.
And that's such a cool thing. I also wanted to say, too, Ronnie, that... I appreciate you, man. You know, over the years, man, he's actually made me a part of his family. I mean, I know all his whole family,
yeah.
Eloise,
yeah.
Deborah, Hubert, his kids. You know, I mean, and that means a lot to me that he actually embraces me as part of his family.
That's for sure, man. I mean, my kids, you know, grew up with you like Uncle Bubba to them, man.
Oh, wow. Man, we're going to take just a couple more minutes of your time because I know it's so much you have to do in anticipation of tomorrow night. Let's take it back to the early stages of your career when you were first making your mark. And I just wanted to have your impressions of what happened to the music that started out. They didn't have a name for it, but people from my generation said, man, it's instrumental, but I feel that. It was so soulful. You know, you were categorized as a jazz musician, but you were one of the first to have commercial success. And then afterwards, there was a wave of, for lack of a better phrase, white musicians who came on the scene, and they started calling it
smooth jazz
or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy to know that here we are all these many years later, we're going back to the source. And I hope as you plant this flag that we all get behind it, around it, and have this music rise like a phoenix, man, because I can assure you this is some hot stuff,
that's
man.
That's beautifully said. I mean, really, that's it's just carrying on that legacy, man. I mean, that's why I came up with the title Solo. It's really paying homage and tribute to, you know, the earlier patriarchs, you know, like John Coltrane and Miles and, you know, the Duke Ellingtons, Ella Fitzgerald, and I mean, you know, those are the people that planted the seeds and, you know, and put us where we are today, you know. I mean, as far as their impact and influence on, you know, musicians like me, you know. So, you know, I was very fortunate to grow up in a very musical environment, you know, with my mother being the choir director and, you know, having rehearsals in the home on weekends, listening to, you know, different singers in the choir, and then my brother Hubert and Eloise, and, you know, so it was just, and then in the same neighborhood, you know, having people like the Crusader, you know, Wayne Henderson and Wilton Felder.
Woo, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Oh, Crusaders.
All those guys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I remember when I was a little kid in elementary school, Wayne Henderson, they lived right behind us, you know, right across from the elementary school I used to go to, Burris Elementary School. And so I knew what time that, you know, when they would get out of school, that they would come over to Wayne's house and rehearse, you know, Hubert and, you know, Joe Sample, all of them, man. And I would just wait for him, man. I would wait for him. And, they, you know, when they would start, man, I would just sit in the corner of the living room, man, and just watch him play, man.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So, you know, having all of that, you know, it really impacted, you know, my future view of what I wanted to do.
Hey, Ronnie, I have a very, very simple question. And as young guys playing at Tennessee State and Texas Southern, what did it feel like for you all to come out for that halftime show and find the stands still filled with people?
Oh yeah, it was something, man. Texas Southern and Southern University,
right?
Big rival. Yeah, and the football is a huge tradition in Texas, man.
Yeah, but that halftime, the phenomenon he's talking about, it didn't matter if y'all had a losing season.
Oh, no, we didn't care about the football, man.
The popcorn people was going broke, man, because nobody move when the Ocean of Soul came out there.
Oh, I still go to the Battle of the Bands down in Georgia, down in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah, no football, just bands.
Ramblin' and
Texas A&M,
yeah.
FAMU, oh, yeah, you had them all.
You know about FAMU, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, them Rattlers, boy.
Yeah, man.
Marching 100. Hey, Ronnie, how did you end up being a part of the original band with Earth, Wind & Fire?
Well, I was just doing a lot of freelancing when I arrived in L.A., and I was ended up playing with a pianist by the name of Doug Kahn. Ex-husband of Gene Kahn.
Oh, okay.
And I was in the band, and him and Maurice, you know, they knew each other, you know, and it's really interesting because I was, while being in Doug's band, Maurice had expressed to Doug that he's looking for, you know, horn players.
Mm.
And Doug, you know, out of the kindness of his heart, man, he shared that with me, and so he said, yeah, Maurice would like to, you know, have you come and audition, man. And Maurice had basically already heard that I was in town because he knew of my brother Hubert. So it wasn't like, you know, he just, you know, snatching my name out of the air. I mean, he knew basically that I had just gotten in town. And so he was just curious, you know. So I did go to, fast forward, I did go to the audition and you know, thinking that I was going to be a part of a horn section, it didn't turn out that way because after he heard me play, he said, you know what? Right, I'm just going to do something different. I don't think we're going to do a horn section. I'm just going to go with the one, you know,
wow,
single horn. And
wow.
That lasted for a couple, even after I left, you know. Andrew Falk, is that his name? You know, he took my spot. And but then eventually they went to the Phoenix Horn.
Phoenix Horn, yeah. Donna Myrick now. Yeah. Man, look, man, I'm just breathless in anticipation for tomorrow night, and I know...
Sound like a groupie, doesn't it, Ronnie?
I am, man. I am, man. I love this music, man. Music matters more than anything to me, man, because it sets the tone for life, man, for me, you know.
You know what? If you want more information about what happened to Earth, Wind & Fire, you can, Maurice, his autobiography was released this past September.
Oh.
And so he talks about all of that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And, you know, and it's called Maurice White, My Life with Earth, Wind & Fire. So...
Okay.
Yeah, you can go online and get it. It's in the bookstore. It's a real great. It's a great read, man. I mean, it's the guy that put it together. I mean, as far as he was so accurate. I mean, and, you know, it's just really incredible. You know how they pinned everything that really took place. You know.
So what we're gonna do tomorrow night is pay homage to the spirit and legacy of how your music, integrated into that scene, and then you formed your own orbit, man.
Yeah.
And we're gonna take it to the sky tomorrow. Now we're gonna reach for the sky, man.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate it all, man.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, if you can make it out tomorrow night, it's 7 o'clock, Catalina Bar and Grill. The great Ronnie Laws, man. Thank you for stopping by Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, and don't be a stranger, bro.
See you tomorrow night, man.
Thank you, guys. guys. Take care now.
All right. See that later, was Ronnie Ronnie Laws, ladies and gentlemen. You better best believe that. Before we go to break, the man to my far right is someone I've known for almost 30 years now. And he's got this distinguished look, you know, the Ivy League thing going, but that's his own creation. Brian Franklin, tell us a little bit about what it is that you bring to the world of technology, and in the same way you are virtuoso as Ronnie is in music.
You know, interestingly, before I go there, I went to Locke High School. And so Gary Bias, who's playing sax for the Earth, Wind & Fire, is a friend who went to Locke. Reggie Young on trombone, Locke High School. And the drummer, Ndugu.
Went to Locke. Didn't Patrice go to Locke, too?
Patrice, Locke.
Patrice went to Locke. Yeah.
Right. Locke.
Sure.
My brother, I'm going to stop there. So
please.
Getting carried away.
Yeah,
turn it on. But turn it on, Brian.
Just, this is about you.
I feel you, brother. Yeah. But I was just feeling the energy and the spirit of music. I'm from a music high school.
Yeah, no doubt.
And our band member, our band leader came from Southern. So he brought that edge. That edge
to
the West Coast. But for me, I'm a technologist and been in the technology sector since 1984. The personal computer was introduced to the general population in 1982. So I've been in basically since the beginning of the personal computer technology. Fast forward, 2006-ish, coming home from my daughter's graduation from Spelman, and on the plane was the partner of the brother that invented .com, a black man by the name of Emmett McHenry invented .com in 1979. And then I worked in a company traveling around the world. I used to average 100,000 miles around the world working in the technology sector. So bottom line, the printed circuit board industry, those green things inside computers. So I've been in IBM's manufacturing facility worldwide, HP, you name it.
Intel,
you
all
name
of
it. Well, Intel is IC. They weren't PC.
PC,
yes, sir. The printed circuit board. So you have the printed circuit board and the IC goes on top.
Top of it,
so
yeah.
In conclusion, when I was able to do what I call an active retirement in 1997, I became conscious of my family's inability to stop working. So I started researching an industry best known as the network marketing industry in 1997. Started looking at some of the issues in regards to the industry and figured out what was broken and created a solution called BAM. I'm Brian Franklin, and I approve that.
So message. What does BAM stand for?
BAM stands for Better American Movement. And what that means is we're moving from brick and mortar to click and order.
Sure.
And so I'm not a pure capitalist, so I feel that the billions that are being made in cyberspace, we should share more of the revenue. So we came up with a revenue sharing model that has a network marketing overtone, but we call it network marketing 3.0. If you're not leveraged, getting wealthy is impossible. There's no one who's wealthy who did it by themselves. Okay. So that's the good part. The bad part of network marketing is the deceptions and the distractions. The ugly is good, bad, and ugly. The ugly is when you move into the NFL. The NFL stands for no friends left.
No friends. No friends left. Right.
Think about it. So bottom line, BAM is a statement of change. Okay. So again, a better American movement, working together, click and order versus brick and mortar. Because watch this. Amazon is shutting down store. Sears closing right now is directly related to Amazon. JCPenney's closed 100 stores a few months ago, directly related to Amazon.
Macy's.
Walmart. Name the stores.
Sure.
So that brick and mortar is going down. Now, we're not going to stop 100%, but now with the drones delivering same day within hours, things are changing drastically. So bottom line, we want to create some more wealthy people, starting with black people, because that's where I'm from. Other cultures do that naturally, utilizing the internet. We have a model to actually make that work. And so that's called BAMWorks.net.
Say that one more time.
Yeah, so the data in regards to our research.
No, BAM.
BAM Works.
BAMWorks.net.
Yes, sir.
Yes, yeah. Now, you shared a sobering statistic with me last week, and that is of the 10 wealthiest people in the world, 8 of them are in what genre, if you will?
Well, more importantly, in regards to that data, 8 men have more wealth than over 3.6 billion people in the world. If you look at those eight, it's technology. I'll name most of them. Mark Zuckerberg, sure. Facebook, okay? Recent. Mm-hmm. Jeff Bezos, Amazon, mm-hmm. recent. And these guys are in the top five now. Warren Buffett, who owns many, all kinds of companies, including technology.
Sure.
Bill Gates, clearly. Mm-hmm. The Google boys, you got Larry and Sig. So they're, now I'm at six. How many is that?
Six.
And then we have Larry Ellison, which is Oracle.
Oracle.
Okay. Right. And I'm leaving out somebody from a technology perspective, but
that's it.
Eight men control over more money than over 3.6 billion people in the world. And watch this. We can play, but we have to understand that capitalism is flawed based on statistics. Most people are getting poorer. They're not getting richer. And I don't want to digress into the political spectrum, kind of like Brother Jason Whitlock doesn't go into the political. But there's a reason why there's so many billionaires that are now in the cabinet in the White House.
Sure.
Because they want to keep theirs and keep us down. So bottom line, we have a solution that's very, very holistic. And I trust that everybody listening will actually visit BAMWorks.net. And I trust they will collaborate with us. And then I want them to go to your website, Bobby, because you also have a connection with us on the net. And
that I got to work out the wrinkles on.
Your site works, though.
I'm a Stone Age kind of guy. And this, the reason he's on is he's supporting the show tonight financially. And as we begin to turn the corner, we have to look at sponsorship, but more importantly, the right kind of equity-based collaborations. And so he'll be a recurring guest on the show as we begin to expose ways for us to become more economically viable through using the people who are at the top of their fields. And clearly this brother has been retired since 1997, and he ought to know something about making money, you see, without having to kill people one way or the other or to destroy communities. So that's what this introduction tonight was. Brian, I know you got to get somewhere right now, but get used to that face. And one more time, tell them how they get a look at what it is that you do.
Yeah, I want you to go to BAMWorks.net. And for those of you that have your mobile phones out, just text the word BAM to area code 323-816. No, actually, do it to a different one. Text BAM to 323-451-5050. Again, that's 323-451-5050. Text the word BAM. They'll get data back regarding our conference calls. And we use a lot of technology. And ironically, the company that provides that solution is Black-owned.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We're going to take a short break. Brian, thank you so much. BAMWorks.net.
We'll Brian, be back. Hold on. Brian, before you, when you come back, let's talk net neutrality.
I look forward to it.
I'd like to hear that.
Yes, sir.
I'd like for you to explain to me.
Yes, sir. Actually, what I would do is actually have one of my team members expound on that.
Okay.
I deal with the money.
Okay.
And not the politics of the net.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, right. I'd like to hear that.
Very
okay.
good, sir.
Okay, cool.
All right. We'll be right back. My man.
All right.
All right, we're Black, and we've been joined. You're going to scoot around a little bit, Brother Greg. Like they say, it's 6 degrees of separation. They say it's 6 degrees of separation. The brother to my far right, his name is Greg Campbell, and the name of his company is CH1 Media Group. Man, welcome to Uncle Bobby's Country Corner, man.
Oh, man, pleased to be here.
And I met his father through an organization called Recycling Black Dollars that I first associated with back in 1988.
With Muhammad.
Yes. And his, Vic, you need to come on around here.
Okay.
I mean, I washed up before I came in here, bro.
Okay. No, I'm good. Right. Are we
yeah,
good?
Yeah, yeah. And so, Greg's father, Billy, was one of the charter members, I believe, of Recycling Black Dollars. And I knew his dad for many, many years. And he reached out to me a little over a year ago, I guess it was, wasn't it, Greg?
Yeah, it was a year
ago. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I kind of blew him off because I didn't know who he was or what he did at the time. And I was doing another show. And we just didn't connect at that point. But thanks to his persistence, he kept coming at me, man. And then when I saw him for the first time, last week?
Yeah, a week, yeah.
Yeah, he had purchased a Kangen water machine.
Okay.
And he wanted some assistance with it. And I went out to his home, and he said, man, I'm into a variety of things. The shirt that you can't really see because of where I'm sitting is an amazingly comfortable T-shirt that he produced. Tell us a little bit about what you do as an entrepreneur, Rick.
Oh, man. So basically back in about 90s, I went to high school with some guys that were in a rap group. And so when they got signed, I was the one who always had a car. So I'd take them to the record label to go and have their meetings and whatnot. So they'd have me come, and sometimes I sit in the lobby, sometimes I sit in on the meeting, and I just kind of see how things worked. And basically how the record label work was, they would take the artist, and they would never tell them how much they charged them for, let's say, like stickers, T-shirts, any type of media, branding, marketing collateral, anything like that. What they do is they would throw it on a statement that would come to the business manager, but then it really wouldn't trickle down to the artist. But the shorter the story, the record label would like charge up three times. But with my relationship with the record label, I saw that they really only had about four interns and about two employees, and the people would work for them for free just to be down. So years later, I ended up managing the group, maybe around like 97, 98, ended up managing the group. And then we went out on tour. They didn't have any merch. And so they said—
Merchandise.
Yeah, merchandise. So they said, well, if you produce it, you take 75%. We take 25%. And, you know, you can get away. Because at the time, my mom had just passed. And, you know, I was kind of going through a few things. And one of the guys was like, man, get your passport and come to Europe. So I was like, man, what is a brother going to do in Europe? They're like, nah, man, you got to come. You got to come. So I went, took 3 weeks worth of merch over.
Merchandise.
Took 3 weeks worth of merchandise over, sold it out like in a week and a half. So I came back and I had the money. And at the time, they were having an issue with the record label. So the record label wasn't putting their music out. It kind of froze up. But the group they were actually smart. What they did was they took their budget and they rented out a house and bought the equipment. And so the recording studio wasn't controlling the masters and all that kind of stuff. So one of the guys was like, man, we got this little bit of money, we should put some music out. And I was like, man. And he was like, yeah, dude, let's do our own CD. He's like, they're not going to put it out, whatever. The relationship is strained. Let's just do our thing. So we did it. And I got a little more money. So then we had this guy who was actually, he was introduced to us by the record label who was printing the shirts. So being young, black, and in business, and very naive, we're like, well, okay, if we go and order shirts from him, if we pay him all the money up front, we're going to get faster service. Negative. He got the money.
Took his time.
Well, he ended up getting a job from Coca-Cola.
Oh.
And so he just totally pushed us to the back. So by the time we did get our shirts, went back out on tour, made a little bit of money, and one of the guys in the group said, man, we should buy our own equipment. And at the time, I had just purchased my house, and I had a back house, and I was like, man, I never thought about doing it myself. And he's like, man, we got to do something for ourselves. So I went, set up my back house with a T-shirt printing situation, started there. That was right around 2002. Fast forward to 2017. Now we have a 5,000 square foot facility out in Santa Fe Springs. Half of it, Pro Tools and Avid. The other half of it, screen printing, sublimation, business cards, banners, all the marketing collateral that a person would need produced domestically. Like what we do. We do in Santa Fe Springs, and it's ironic because before we ended up in Santa Fe Springs, I used to drive from our office in Koreatown to Santa Fe Springs to the shirt distributors. Mm. Mm-hmm. There was three different shirt distributors in Santa Fe Springs, so our spot in Koreatown ended up having some issues, and the landlord got us out of the deal. Whatever, told us, you know, man, you'd be better off going somewhere else because he had some building issues. So the first day I looked in the paper, it was a spot in Santa Fe Springs, but it was half the price of the spot we had in Koreatown, but double the Side, the warehouse space, because it was just the warehouse. So
right.
We went in and we built it up. And so then I said to myself, well, you know what? Instead of doing what I do just for the group, why don't I take the game that I kind of learned from the record label? Let me get some interns. Started getting interns. Then from the talented interns, I started hiring people. Then I said, well, you know what? What I'll do is I'm a salesman. Not like my dad, you know, I was just raised, like my role model was a salesman. He was all about like hard sales, insurance man forever. So what I did was I said, well, you know what? I'll hire me some guys, web designer, graphic designer, and someone to kind of help me with the T-shirts. But what I would do is I wouldn't worry about necessarily making money. I would make sure that they stayed paid. And then what I would get out of it is if I could get them to finish their work early, I could start sliding jobs in. So then my business partner was like, well, man, instead of you just focusing so much on the group and all that, why aren't you offering what you do to other rappers, other businesses, other, you know, situations? So I had a buddy who had a million-dollar clothing line, and he inspired me a lot. And he was one of those guys that when he had the dough, he would always allow me to pick his mind, ask him questions and whatnot. So I asked him, I said, man, you know, you started out with one unit in this commercial strip and you ended up with five, and then you lost everything. I said, if looking back at what you did, what would you say you would change and what would you say your mission was that drove you out of business or whatever? And he said, well, I didn't like to say no to people. He said, it was a little detrimental, but that was my thing. I didn't want to say no to people. But what I would have changed was every bit of money I got, I just expanded myself without really needing to, without really even being able to support it. And he just looked at it like, if he had the money, why not? You know, he was cool with the landlord, every single thing. So I took a combination of one of the guys that's in the group, who's my close friends. I took a combination of his philosophy, my father's philosophy, and this guy's philosophy. And I've been able to make a living. Haven't had a paycheck since 96.
Well, just to kind of capitalize this, because, again, you will be a recurring guest, because the brother's working with me in every way, and that's what this show is about. OG Portis has been fortunate enough to create an atmosphere here, thanks to Brother Quincy, where this is an incubator almost. You know, and we all have a chance to elevate. And so Brother Greg's going to be working very closely with me to close some of the gaps that I got in my program, and there's enough of them to go around. But we're coming strong, though. We're coming strong. Thanks to this wonderful young brother.
Baby steps.
How do people get in touch with you for any number of needs, whether it be printing and some of the things that you alluded to earlier?
Fastest way is to email me. My email address is gisandgregory@ch1media.com. gisandgregory@ch1media.com.
G
at CH1.
At CH1.
Which is the numeral, media.com.
Media.com. And by next week, we'll make sure that his brand is embedded in everything that we do, man. Welcome aboard, man. And just sit tight, man. We're going to finish the show with my homeboy, man, on the eve of a return to the world of music after. Just tell him a little about who you've played with since I first met. He started with a band in Nashville called The Syndicate, and they used to play for Chicken Wings. And Bubba was about 13 years old playing for grown folks.
No,
man.
That was a correction that needs to be made. It wasn't Chicken Wings. It was the whole chicken. You got the chicken.
So you moved. He was selling you cheap.
Yeah. We did this one gig because we did the chilling circuit, right? So we did this one gig where the club owner couldn't pay us, right? So he comes out of the back with six chickens and, you know, three in one hand, three in the other, with the head on,
the feet
off,
and everything.
Yeah. And we got paid by those. And we'll take them. We took them, fried them on up and everything. But, yeah, the Syndicate band started. We were actually really very young at the time. And that's
like 14, you know, 15 years old playing in major clubs in Nashville.
Yeah.
And just trying to walk them through your journey, brother, musically speaking.
Well, I have to say that, you know,
when we were talking about that earlier, about going to Tennessee State University and actually playing with the aristocratic bands, what kind of experience that was. And I think that was part of the whole, you know, progressiveness of me learning how to play with people and learning how to be a part of a unit. And the groove started then, too, in a sense, you know. But when I moved out to L.A., I've been fortunate enough to work with people like, of course, Ronnie Laws, George Benson.
Roberta, for 5 years.
Yeah, Roberta Flack, Sheena Easton, Jermaine Jackson, right? Crusaders, you know, Joe Sample and mm-hmm. Wilton Felder and all of those guys. Briefly with Jeffrey Osborne, Gerald Albright, you know. I know I'm leaving some people out.
Yeah, I'll get to him for you. He went to school with a brother out of Memphis, Tennessee, who came out here and changed the landscape of the music industry by the name of Doc Holliday. You met him when you was at school. Bubba helped do the music for the show Moesha. It was a group of kids he went to college with in Eastern Illinois, the Farquhar brothers.
Yeah.
And
Kurt and Ralph
right.
Farquhar.
Mm-hmm. And Doc Holliday and him were at Tennessee State together, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Doc was he was a sophomore when I was a freshman at TSU.
Right.
But speaking of Doc, he actually is the person that helped me get the gig with the Backstreet Boys.
He was the MD and the drummer when they were the number one pop band in the world.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, some people don't know what that MD stands for, but it's musical director.
Yeah.
I was actually the musical director and the drummer for the Millennium Tour. Which was an incredible experience because we played in front of like 80,000 people sometimes, 15,000 people sometimes. You know, it was an amazing situation.
And I have seen Bubba on recordings that are iconic. When George Benson was in Montreux, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, Montreux.
Yeah, that was the young Bubba Bryant back there twirling them, man, and putting it in, man. And if you've seen some of the videos with the great Bobby Womack, you played with Bobby twice, didn't you?
As a matter of fact, I played with Bobby over the years. There was a DVD. Well, actually, was it a DVD? I know. Yeah, it was a DVD, a live record.
When y'all
was still
Europe.
Doing the LPs. Yeah, you actually performed in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a DVD, a live record of a live record. And the LP, it was an LP then.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got to share how incredible this brother is, not just because I've known him since we were kids, but because of what I've seen him do to the music. Because he left out a group he played with for over 3 years, the Temptations, the Temptations. And it was one night, it was Bobby Womack's last performance here in L.A. at the Saban Theater in Beverly Hills. It's been about 3 years ago, Dan and Bubba.
Yeah, well, he died in 2014.
Yeah, it's been 3 years. And I was at the sound check, right? And Bobby was already, you know, ravaged from a number of different illnesses and stuff. And the only thing that seemed to pick him up was the show. And he came in and they was doing the rehearsal. And he walked up and he saw Bubba. And Bubba was his security blanket, man. He knew that if Bubba was sitting behind them drums, he could do whatever he wanted to. And they started rehearsing, "If You Think You're Lonely Now." And he told Bubba, "Pick it up a little bit, Bubba." And then he improvised when he got to the part where he said, "If you think you're lonely now, wait until I leave your ass." Oh, it's one of those just special moments. And then the night of that show, oh, my God, man, it was unbelievable. And to see George Benson when he would do Broadway, and he would go to the solo, the drum solo, and to know that that's my homie, man, just – and George was like a proud papa. He would just rap back and say, "I can take the next 5 minutes off, man," because Bubba is a showman drummer. Mm-hmm. And a virtuoso drummer. And so when he takes that stage tomorrow night, he know for sure I'm asking for it. And he going to deliver it, man. This is my homie, man.
Bubba, when was the first time you put drumsticks in your hand? When the first time you started playing?
I started playing when I was six.
Uh-huh.
I was six. I was in, you know, I was little bitty guy, you know.
Yeah.
I always had a passion for it, you know, just – I had to do it. one of those kind of things. Just, I always say it's a blessing. It's been a blessing for me.
It's the only thing he's ever done is play drum. He was I used to think he was a mute when I first met him, man, when I was about 12. He wouldn't talk too much. He wasn't real social. But then he'd get behind them drum. I'm like, that can't be the same dude, man, because he just turned into
different
this.
Different guy.
Oh, man, just totally a machine, expressive. Man. I thought he had eight hands, man. I'm like, what is he doing? He's too young to be running through all these changes he was doing, man. And then be tender with it. And then play, he could be a metronome 1 minute and combustible bubble the next, man. Mm-hmm. And it's just been a joy, man, to see how he has impacted music. Because when he was with the Temptations, Otis was the last of them, and the way that he got the gig, the drummer had died, right, that they had for many years?
Yeah, he was with, his name was Buster. They called him Buster. I'm not really sure what his real name was, but he had passed, and they went through a couple of guys. It didn't work out. And
Otis loved Bubba, man, because they were in Vegas at the Orleans the first time I really had a chance to, you know, mix with the group. And I interviewed Otis, and I said, what is it about Bubba? He said, man, this cat takes me back to the origins of the Motown sound, the Funk Brothers, because, see, they had two drummers and percussion.
Sure.
All right. And Bubba is the only drummer in this unit, but he's playing all of the percussion runs, right? And it worked out well for Otis, because Otis is a trooper, man. He wanted it at that tempo, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the rest of the cats hated Bubba because they were sweating through their clothes, man. Bubba be bringing it, man. If you're in L.A. tomorrow night, I'm telling you, you really don't want to miss this. I'm hopeful that we are having somebody record this very special night. If we got to figure, I got to call somebody to see to make sure that they got that covered, man.
Yeah.
This is going to be an incredible night of music and fellowship around the great Ronnie Laws. And before we close, because we're down to the last couple of minutes of the show, any parting remarks?
Well, you know, music soothes the soul. And basically, when the thing about jazz, it has always been a meeting place, eating place for people to get together and get to know each other in fellowship, because hopefully we can still have that in our lives as time goes on.
Yeah.
You know, music does speak louder than words. It's the only thing the whole world listens to. And it's been proven just by yesterday meeting James Ingram, who's been a friend of mine for many years, his brother Phil, and getting to know that he was the lead singer for, what was the name of that group? He said Switch.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's pitching in tomorrow night. And I'm sure that somebody else is going to pop in tomorrow night and make it special, man. And just to sit in this circle with these brothers is a reflection of how music brings people together from different walks. Because before I really got to know Greg, I didn't know that music was a part of his history and his spirit. And here we are sitting all heavily influenced, and to know that the sister behind the board over there, she came from the Oakland style of things, you know. So she sits there every now and then, and she just grins when I be bringing these people in here, because she know what it's all about, the impact that music has on our lives.
Our producer, so, Miss Felicia Morris, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right,
yes,
Ms.
sir.
OG Portis,
yeah,
the man.
There you go. There you go.
She keeps us in stead.
Morris Media Studios.
Yes, that's where we are.
In Leimert Park.
Can I say one more thing before we go?
Please.
When I got back with Bobby, we were flying from Europe once, and he was walking down the aisle of the airplane, and he came up to me and he said, Bubba, I'm so glad you're back, man. I don't know what to do. He says, I think you're the greatest drummer in the world, man. That touched me, man, so deeply. I was just amazed that he actually felt that way about me.
Well, he didn't. I beat him to it, because, see, people sometimes think embellishment is the rule of the day. But in some cases, you can actually say emphatically that somebody is that good. And this brother here, I've seen him take audiences and just put them into those powerful hands of his, man, and just, you've never seen somebody play drums the way Bubba plays them, because it's polyrhythmic, it takes you home to the motherland, and then he'll take you over to Jamaica and all of that, man, in one run, man. Yeah. It's a powerful, powerful thing. This has been another example of why I do this show, Best Practices and Models of Possibility. And until we meet again, it's been a gas. Thank you for letting
me. Well, thank you, Mr. Bobby Glenton Smith. Thank you very much,
man. Thank you, man.
Thanks,
Greg,
man.
man, thanks for coming on board with us, Greg. Man.
No problem, man.
Hey, y'all, it's been a blast, and we'll see you next week. We out of here.
Yep.